96.
Shout out to our sponsors.
Which are Brawlby,
Clinch Custom Mouth Guard,
Razorware, Intimidation Clothing, Bank Crimes, Global MMA Consulting, No Pain, Just Glory, Central Oregon Trike, Combat Sports Insurance, Vision Smoke Shop, 24NLV, Graco Sports, Triumph Fitness, Big T's Nightclub, BrassBoundWorld.biz.
Hey, what's up, Carl? How are you tonight, brother?
Good, good, good. Very good. Let's get that other guy in.
Well, I'm a poor man. I feel no pain. I've struggled half of my life by going against the grain, but I think I can only get one chance at this. I'm going
to... Yo, my dudes! What is going on?
Oh, good here.
Same here, man. Nice, beautiful day.
Did you get a new crow, Carl?
No, man. I had frost on my motorcycle this morning, though.
Nice.
I thought I'd share that with you. I had to scrape the frost off the seat of my motorcycle before I went to work.
I heard Lethbridge, or however you say that shit up there, I heard they got nailed with some snow today.
Lethbridge did? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good place for it.
Yeah, we got down in the cold, but, I mean, we didn't get no snow last night.
Home of Jordan and Lee Meehan, Rumble in the Cage, Lethbridge, Alberta.
Speaking of which, Madhouse will have your live results for anybody who wants to... follow what's going on up there with that phenomenal organization. Speaking of great organization.
Do they have a stacked card?
Do they have a stacked card? And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Carl, they're going to be available on Go Fight Live, correct?
Yes, Go Fight Live. They usually are. Those shows are pretty much always on Go Fight Live. Phenomenal.
Dude, phenomenal is definitely the word to be used. And you know, speaking of great cards and stacked events, we're going to be talking tonight with some great people from across the country. Tonight we're going to focus this first hour mostly on what's going on down in Texas. You guys touched on it a little bit ago, a few weeks ago, with some guests from Texas. And we're going to be bringing on this wonderful lady, Jennifer Ray. She's out of a premier combat group. They put on the Cowboy Extreme Cage Fights in San Antonio, Texas. We will actually be live there this weekend for live results for all those fans as well who can't make that event. She's doing some great stuff down there. They're definitely always building. No, I didn't take any, brother. I'm super excited to have her come on to talk about this card because she's got some, yeah, keep fucking with me, buddy. She's got some great fights on here, including the headliner, which I would like to get clarification on because, you know, I've seen two different names fly in there, and I believe Marcus Huerta is the final choice for that fight, which would be great because this would be an must-go title fight. Which is great, you know, everybody loves those, you know, and, you know, the bantamweight division's always exciting as it is, but when you throw a title in there, you know, it just gets that much better. We're going to try to catch up with Bubba Bush out of Brazos Valley MMA. He's going to be fighting for the title at Legacy, I believe, the 16th of November. So we're going to hopefully get him on in the second half hour, and other than that, man, we're just going to kick back and talk MMA across the world.
Across Texas. California, while we're hanging out in Oregon.
That's right.
With listeners in North Africa. Yeah, buddy. Do it.
Well, let's kick this show off right, and we're going to bring this wonderful young lady, Jennifer Ray, in. Jennifer, how you doing?
I'm awesome. How are y'all doing?
Wonderful.
I'm doing good. I think Skippy took some horse tranquilizers tonight, if you want to know the truth.
I'm running on some low energy tonight. I'm not usually this dull, but I'd like to welcome you to Madhouse Live. You're on with Lapaki and Skippy. I have the pleasure of getting to talk to you multiple times before you came on, and we've covered your last event, and we're going to be covering your event coming up this Saturday, October 6th. Super excited to talk to you about this card. First of all, I'd like you to give everybody a little bit of rundown about the promotion and a little bit of history about yourself, if you wouldn't mind.
No, absolutely. We started the company back in 2009. I was only 25. Before then, we had been doing pro shows, and I actually started my business partner, his name is Trevor Bird. I started as his intern, and we were doing pro shows. The last one we did was in 07, and it was at the AT&T Center, and we had Daryl Schoonover on the card. I don't know if anybody remembers him, but he was on The Ultimate Fighter, and Rampage Jackson very lovingly nicknamed him Titties. He was on our card. Aaron Rosa, former UFC fighter, was on our card. We had Josh Haynes. Definitely a big show for us. And after, you know, after that show, we kind of had to take a time out. Our normal everyday day-to-day life is he's the general manager for Green Harley-Davidson and Javelina Harley-Davidson. They're here in Texas, and I handle the marketing for both of those dealerships. So we kind of had to step back. That's when the economy was kind of taking a turn, and we needed to refocus on the dealerships. And once we got back on track with the dealerships, we came back and said, you know, we really want to get back into MMA. I literally one day walked into his office and said, you know, can I just set up an amateur company? And he was like, sure, go ahead. So that's where it all got started. And that was in November of 08. And in May of 2009, we threw our first event under Premier Combat Group, actually at our Harley-Davidson dealership. And we kind of took a little break. We did that fight, regrouped, and then came back in 2010. And we've been doing fights every other month since then. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, I've been super impressed. Your last card had some great fights. I'm looking forward to this card. I'd like to get a quick clarification for the headliner. Is Marcus in or is Parker in?
Marcus is in. Originally, it was Parker Reed and William Boone Blair, and Parker ended up popping a tendon. And so he is walking around in a boot right now. He will be back on our December 1st card to fight whoever wins. They'll be defending their title against Parker. So Marcus Huerta, he fights out of Weapons at Hand in Corpus. This guy is amazing. 2-0, same record as William Boone Blair. His last fight, he'd fought August 31st in San Antonio, and then on September 15th went to Beaumont, fought there, knocked out his opponent, and is back to fight for us. So this guy stepped up, wanted to take the fight, and we were more than happy to get him on. So I think it's going to be a really good fight.
Yeah, I was curious about that. Knowing that William Blair had fought for you previous, you obviously felt comfortable with his abilities, so you went out and found who I thought was a very tough kid for him to step into, especially for a title on the line. So I'm super excited to see this fight. You have a really good card all the way through, though, and, you know, that's one of the things I really appreciate about what you're doing and why we wanted to bring you on is you are promoting amateurs, and you're putting on a great card consistently. Would you like to talk about some of the other fights? And actually, before we get into the fights, happy birthday, belated.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The last year of my 20s, so I got to make it a good one.
Talk about the matchmaking. I see you've brought some kids in from quite a few good gyms who have, you know, very, very well-known coaches, some of them very reputable coaches. How has that come together? You've been able to grab all these guys and bring them into one organization to fight as amateurs. Has that been tough for you guys?
You know, it really hasn't. I am very blessed and very fortunate that at this point, we are now having fighters call us. I get calls almost daily from guys who are trying to get on the card, And it, the way that it started, I mean, I was having to cold call coaches, literally, hey, do you have any guys? Do you want to get them on the card? And so it was kind of tough at the beginning. But, you know, fortunately, we've been able to develop a good reputation. And now we're getting these fighters calling us. And it's been awesome. You know, I definitely, one thing I don't ever want to be is a traveling circus. I mean, I don't ever want to have the same fighters over and over and over again. What I really want to do is develop these guys, you know, make sure that they have everything that they need when they do go pro. So that's kind of how the matchmaking for me has evolved. You know, I learn about these guys, some of them who've already fought. I try to find them on YouTube, see what their styles are, learn about their gyms, and I go from there. So some on a lot of our cards, you'll see some fighters come back. If they are, it's because I really love the show they put on the time before. And you got to remember, I'm trying to do a series, so we always want to have people in line for title fights. But the guys that you'll see come back are guys who have put good shows on before the card before or maybe a couple fights before. And then I try to get as many as debuts as I can because I know how hard it is for these guys to get a fight sometimes.
Well, yeah, you definitely. I think you have like 8-9 gyms represented there, and I mean, you know, mm-hmm. obviously you guys, you have, you know, Travis Luter's going to be hanging out at this event, which is, you know, obviously he's raising some great kids out there at Luter MMA. You know, LaBox, jump in at any time, brother.
I'm kind of curious, Jennifer. Were there any more difficulties in lining up an all amateur show in comparison to when you were doing the pro show?
You know, when. I'm going to know only because when we were doing pro shows, Saul Solis was actually our matchmaker. I was just helping with the back end stuff, but Saul Solis came in, and of course, I mean, that's Tito Ortiz's trainer. When Saul calls, you're going to fight for him. And at the time, he still had his promotion, Renegades. So, I mean, that definitely wasn't difficult at all. Putting these cards together now, fortunately, a lot of the coaches who fought for us when we were pro, a lot of them knew who I was already. So getting some of them back on board wasn't a problem. I'd also helped with the organization TAMA before we got our amateur license, so some of those guys knew me from there. So putting together the cards now as amateur is, it's definitely not, you know, any more difficult or any less difficult than it was for pro. I think the only problem that you run into when you're amateur is these guys aren't under contract. They're not getting paid, so they can drop out at the last minute. And, you know, you can't get mad. Sometimes they get hurt, you know, for whatever reason. You can't really get upset. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. But I think that's probably the biggest kind of roadblock that I run into is I don't have them under contract, so when they drop out, they drop out. There's nothing you can do about it.
And how has it been? Have you had many ladies on your cards historically since you've gone amateur?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if it's just South Texas or I've got some really, really talented women on, you know, with our organization. And sometimes finding them opponents has been really difficult. One of my favorite fights was Robert Villegas, his sister, Elizabeth fights. And I've got her on our card twice, and that woman is so amazing. But she fights at, like, 185, and so finding her an opponent is really hard. And it's sad because she's so good. She puts on such a good show. I mean, this woman really, people need to see her, and it's just so hard because I can never find anybody to match her with. But we do have, we have a nice group of women. Audrey Alvarez, that woman is a beast. She's so good, and it's hard to match her up as well. Paulina Granados, she's tiny. She fights at like 110. She's amazing, and I finally have somebody to fight her. It'll be on our December card. So we've had women, but it's just been hard to, especially for the really, really good ones that we have, it's just been really hard to find opponents for them.
Oh, yeah. Paulina is actually, we're kind of familiar with her. I follow her around on Facebook. I mean, she's always in the gym training, working really hard, and it's kind of fun to watch her progress up the ladder.
Yeah, she's awesome. I've got a woman right now, and her name is River Worth, if I'm not mistaken. She's new to our organization, but her and Paulina are evenly matched. So I've already spoken with Paulina's coach, and We're working on that match for December, so I'll finally get to get Paulina back on one of our cards.
Well, I'll tell you what, River girls named River, we know, are usually pretty tough because we love River Ruckus Jones. You know, somebody we sponsor out of Canada. She's a phenomenal fighter. So, speaking of some of your cards, this card actually, I have a question about. You've got a lot of great fights, like Brian Little and Ty, and then you've got the Eric Longoria Alejandro Rodriguez fight. I've noticed lately, especially in the South, I'm seeing a lot less of the fights above 155. Are you seeing that as well? Because I know on this card, I think you have 9 of your fights are all 155 or less.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have. It's really weird. I don't know what it is. I really don't. I've got so many fighters who are 155 and under. I don't have very many 185s. I maybe have a handful of 205s and heavyweight. I mean, forget it. I've got this guy, Xavier Soto, who's so great. He's heavyweight. And I've only been able to get him on 2 cards because I can't get anybody to match him. So I've really noticed that. I'm not sure where it comes from or why it is, but I've seen more guys under 155 and under registered than anything else. It's weird.
It's hard to keep the weight on down there and all that, heat and humidity.
Well, they need to tell me their secret.
They don't allow fat people in Texas either.
Well, they need to tell me their secret on how they're staying so skinny, because I'd like to know.
Man, I lived out in Tulsa for like 10 years, and I don't know. I feel like I work out a lot more living in Oregon than I did there, but it's harder to keep the weight off because of the cold weather. My body like wants to have extra weight, and I hate it.
Yeah, but Tia Bucky, she's in an area, because I used to live in New Braunfels and San Marcos and Seguin, all that area. Downtown to San Marcos, they got this kick-ass river with waterfalls you can raft down. They've even got, like, a little trolley train. They got a bar down there where you see you can wait for the train to go back up to the top where you start the river again. I mean, people out there in that area, they're just, man, it's beautiful weather, right? You got the river down there. It's just so much fun. Oh, I miss that place. Schlitterbahn. How many times do you go to Schlitterbahn in a summer? Be honest.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I've never been to Schlitterbahn.
Oh, my gosh. Somebody, she is in trouble. Somebody right now with a season pass, take her today.
At the conclusion of the interview, please. We'll just wait 10 minutes and then take her.
After we're done hanging out with Jennifer, somebody, for her birthday, late birthday gift, take her to Schlitterbahn. I know a lot of you fighters down there listening to this. After your great event coming up this Saturday, somebody, one of you winners, take her out. One of the guys who doesn't have the greatest night, take her down to Schlitterbahn, man. She is not to experience it. Wow. That is almost like a kid in Texas not knowing what football is.
I know.
and once again, everybody, Saturday, October 6th, this is going to be at the Cowboy Dance Hall, correct?
Yes, Cowboy Dance Hall.
And for everybody, you can get tickets at premiercombatgroup.com. You can also tickets at the door. You guys are going to open at 5, and your fights start right at 6, correct?
Yeah, and actually what we're doing also is if you go to Ticketmaster.com and you type in the code PCGFAN, you'll get a $5 discount. And we definitely want to encourage people to get there when the doors open because Travis Luter is going to be doing a meet and greet from 5 to 6 o'clock.
You guys know that. Get there early, man. Be in line ready. I mean, you get to meet a great guy, a guy who 90% of the fans out there know on a good day without a bad weight cut would have just had a much better fight with Anderson Silva, and we could have seen a whole different career. You know, I think so many people just brushed him away, and he's a phenomenal fighter, you know.
I mean, there's no better way to describe it. He's just an amazing fighter. He's a stand-up guy. He's actually going to be cornering two of our fighters. No, three of our fighters this weekend.
Brian Little, right?
Yeah, he's cornering Brian Little, Bobby Joe Alexander, and Kevin Holland. They're all from his gym. And he actually was the one who offered to come out and was like, hey, you've got my guys in the card. I got to do a meet and greet. And I was like, oh, my God, I know you. And so I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. And so, yeah, he's such an awesome man, such an amazing coach. And if anybody has ever seen his fighters, they're unreal. So, yeah, he'll be doing a meet and greet from 5 to 6. So come in. Meet him. He's an amazing guy, and you're going to see some amazing fights by his guys.
Yes, Jennifer, which fight are you looking forward to the most on this on the Cowboy Extreme Championship card?
Man, I really want to see Kevin Holland and Zach Reese. Zach comes from Seguin MMA, and if anybody has ever met Coach King Webb, he's got some phenomenal fighters too, and he's an amazing fighter himself. Zach Reese is such an underdog. I saw him fight back in May in Seguin, and this kid is such an underdog. So, I mean, fights at 170, they're both 1-0. They're both, they have this drive that I've never seen before. These two kids are so amazing. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to that fight because I don't even know what's going to happen. Normally when I match them, I can almost tell you, well, I think this guy has a better shot or, oh, I think it might go this way. But with these two kids, I have no idea how it's going to go. And then, of course, our title fight, Marcus and Boone. I have no idea how that one's going to go.
You know, he threw it out, so let me follow up with the same kind of question. Just a single fighter that the fans should watch for. Just who do you think is the most exciting fighter for fans on this card?
Man.
Hey, while you're thinking about that, let me pull Eric in. Eric, you there, buddy?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing? You got a question for Jennifer, or do you want to comment about the event or something?
Well, first of all, I absolutely love the amateur shows, so I support as many as I can if I'm in the area. What city is this show going to be in again? I only caught the tail end of her first thing, and then I have a Travis Luter story. I actually ran into him about 2 weeks ago.
Our fight's in San Antonio.
Okay, so and was that what you guys were asking her, if she'd ever been to the Riverwalk?
We were asking if she'd ever been to New Braunfels, to the Schlitterbahn out there.
Okay, well, obviously the Riverwalk in San Antonio is the place to be, but I ran into Travis Luter and Seth Petroselli. I'm sure you remember him, probably about two and a half
mm-hmm.
weeks ago in Corpus Christi, Texas. Have you ever been to Corpus Christi?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I actually I saw Luter. I was with a group of people, and we saw him. He had his own booth back there with Petroselli. And if people don't remember, he's the one who knocked out Kimbo Slice on that TV. He hasn't really done much since.
He just fought on a K-1 Rising card at K-1 LA. He did lose.
Recently?
Decision. Yeah.
Yep.
On September 8th.
Well, I recognized Travis Luter, and I actually got a chance to go up to him, which most people I wouldn't do that to. You know, the guys are eating or whatever. He was extremely nice, and he had a couple of buddies, and he came over. He signed autographs. He let us know what he was doing. He extremely nice, down-to-earth guy, and he actually had a VIP room in the back, and he came back and gave me a hand job, let me blow a load all over his face.
What? Carl, cut that dude off.
What?
Here?
Yeah, I'm
here.
What the?
Dude,
sorry.
Oh,
for
my God.
I don't know where that guy came from, who he was, so I apologize to any fans out there listening that caught a whiff of that guy real quick. Hey, live radio, what do you do? We get a lot of callers to the show, so I apologize, Jennifer. We only got a few minutes left because dipshit took up most of it, and he's very disrespectful.
Hold on. Can we reset this real quick? Okay, so, how's everybody doing?
Dude,
welcome to Madhouse Radio, Jennifer. This is not how we normally roll on the show, but apparently...
Apparently,
dude, no
worries. He's a really nice guy, I guess. Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I apologize. Back to your great Career Combat group. This week,
yes,
they burned down at the Calgary
back
Dance
to the card. back to the card. Travis Luter is awesome. Anyway.
Do you want to give some shout-outs to some sponsors or any information that we might have missed or you want to go back over? Please run at it real quick.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? Yeah, let's go back really quick. When you ask me who's the fighter to watch out for, people really need to be looking out for this kid named Bobby Joe Alexander. He's freaking amazing. Y'all need to watch out for him. And he's actually in our co-main event, so keep an eye out for him. I definitely want to say thank you to Furious Brand. They are our, they do all the t-shirts, they've actually do our PCG t-shirts, they have their own clothing line, and they've been with us from the beginning, so we love them. Manny, Jazzy, thank you guys so much. Want to say thank you to, our dealerships that we own, Green and Javelina Harley-Davidson, because they also sponsor the fight. Bud Light, they sponsor everything that we do, so thank you to Bud Light. Thank you to TexasFighting.com, Mike Columbus at TexasMMA.com. Thank you so much. And then, of course, thank you to Cowboys Dance Hall for they letting us do the fights there, accommodating every one of our needs. We're so grateful. And, of course, last but not least, oh, Jordan Ford. Jordan Ford, huge sponsor. I bought my Explorer from there. And last but not least, of course, the fans. We wouldn't have a show without them. Our fans, our fighters, thank you so much.
You guys know my spiel every week, man. Get out, support local MMA. Take that $44.95 that you would have spent on SUFA and go down and support, you know, any promotion. But definitely go out this weekend if you're in San Antonio or the surrounding area and support these kids. Buy a T-shirt from the sponsors. Go out there and, you know, meet Travis Luter and have a good time. And remember, these kids are out there trying to build themselves and get better to become pros, but we've got to support them as amateurs. We've got to get out and support all the stuff going on this weekend, especially you get out and support combat extreme cage fighting Saturday, October 6th at the Cowboy Dance Hall in San Antonio. Jennifer, I so feel like a bad. You know, we've had a guy slip out on his mom once about fried chicken, but that's like as bad as it's ever gotten. I don't know. I apologize. And I thank you, and I hope down the road you'll come back on again.
Oh, you know what? No worries. I mean, this sport is a man's sport, and you know, what can you say? Shit happens, so it's okay.
That's the best way to put it. Jennifer, we really appreciate it. We appreciate you allowing us to have somebody down there covering the event live for you guys so that we can post those results. If you ever need any information launched out, just get it over to me or Skippy, and we'll get it right up on the site for you guys without any questions asked, and we'd love to work with you on that aspect.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for supporting MMA and for supporting Premier Combat Group, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You have a wonderful night, and happy birthday once again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Dude, I feel pocky. I don't even know what to say, dude. Holy shit, man. Like, that came out of nowhere, dude. Like, I'm
hold on, dude. So, hold on. I really did this here, and I shot a load in his face, right?
Yeah, dude, I can't believe you said that, dude. Like, I'm listening to this story, and he's like, yeah, me and my buddies, he was real cool. And then all of a sudden, that came out, and I'm like, hold on a second, man. Hold on a second. I know that I'm a little slow today, but I ain't that slow. Wow.
Dude,
it
took me a second. I was like, maybe I misheard. But everybody was quiet, and I was like, no, I didn't mishear anything. That is exactly when it went down. Went from shaking hands to blowing loads in somebody's face. I don't know what the hell was going on.
Oh, my God. I don't even know, I don't even know where this guy came up with this crap, man.
Dude, I just wish that the listeners could hear Carl right now because he's steaming right now. He's just like, oh, shit.
Oh, I know. Hey, well, let's get rid of that piece of crap who just totally ruined a good segment. And we've got a great chance to talk to somebody who I believe is truly the future in this sport. This guy is an all-around, just straight-up, top-notch individual. He runs a phenomenal gym in Brazos Valley MMA. Bubba Bush, welcome to the show once again. I'm glad you came back. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, man. Well, I hope you missed the first segment because it was horrible.
Horrible, Skippy. Quit making a mountain out of a molehill.
Well, it wasn't what we needed. Now, what we do need is to talk to this great gentleman. You've got a serious fight coming up, I believe the 11th of November. No, 16th
should be
of November.
16th of November.
16th, yes. You're fighting for the title, the middleweight 185 title for Legacy. How excited are you?
Extremely. This is definitely the biggest fight I've had, so I'm very excited about it.
How does it feel that even after the DQ to get that title shot?
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody that watched that fight card that night knew that was a horrible call.
You know, call aside, I felt like I won the fight, had it where I wanted it, and, you know, nothing against Martinez. He's a good guy and a good fighter, but he wasn't getting up. So I don't think, you know, I don't feel like I lost that fight in any way, so I don't worry about the record so much. You know, I would hope it wouldn't set me back from getting this title fight, and it didn't, so.
Now, you know, talking, you know, with Trey down in College Station, who you know, who comes down to the gym occasionally, we both felt even before the Young fight that you should have had your name in that contention. You know, now that you're there, do you feel like it's time to really prove that you should be there?
Absolutely. Of course, I mean, you know, getting there is one thing, staying there is another. So I've got a lot to prove. I haven't earned anything yet, and just getting there doesn't count for anything. I've been there once before, and as we've seen, you know, it doesn't help to get there. You got to finish. You can go 4.5 rounds, but you know, you've got to go the distance to make it count for anything.
And, you know, and your Andrew Craig fight, that was a deep war. It was a great fight. Now, I've heard rumors that said that you had health issues, you know, that kept you, you know, hurt towards the later the fight physically. Is that true?
Well, sure. That's not an excuse. I went in, I broke my foot about 4 weeks out, so it's just my conditioning certainly wasn't what it should have been. I've got some other health issues as well, but, I mean, that was a big thing. I was flat-footed the whole fight and couldn't throw that ankle in whenever I got rear control. So, I mean, I definitely had some exigencies I was trying to overcome in that one.
Now Bubba, Noel kind of presents an interesting puzzle, because I've seen like so many, and watching one guy fight, I've never seen so many different personalities in the cage. Like his fight with Artemis, I totally was kind of dumbfounded as to how he was able to kind of control that fight and win it. But then I've also seen him where he fought Muhammad and he knocked him out in the first round. How do you prepare for a guy that kind of is so erratic in his performances?
I mean, I don't know if erratic's the word. I think consistent's actually more the key. He has no weaknesses. He's solid all around. He's well-rounded, and he's consistently well-rounded. So it's not like going in there and expecting something and then getting surprised by something else. You know, we know he's going to be solid in every area. And wherever the fight's been taken, he's just pushed it to a new level. And, you know, risen to the occasion. So it's really consistency, and you got to prepare all around. I think it's Craig all over again. I mean, Craig himself has told me, he's like, hey, I'm not the greatest fighter in any one area, but, you know, I've got great cardio and I'm solid all around, and I'm just going to, you know, he stays calm and wins you out. And I think Noel fights the exact same way. It's just no weaknesses, you know, drag you out, meet you wherever you need to be and get the win, so.
Honestly, I feel that you have superior wrestling. I mean, I think that's your big advantage in this fight, is to get him down and hurt him on the ground and control him through your wrestling.
Well, I hope so.
You know,
yeah, that'd be great.
To me, that's your key to especially a quicker victory would be to you know, to show him, you know, how dominant you are as a wrestler, and using that to transition into the different phases you need to for the ground and pound, and he consistently stays stuck to him. And I think that's where he's going to get into deeper waters and get into trouble with you.
Sure. Yeah, it's all going to come down to who can do damage where. You know, you can't rely on that. Can't expect to be down there the whole time. So we got to win it on the feet, got to win it on the ground. But that's definitely probably the easiest place to finish from.
Now, have you been, you know, stepping outside of BVMMA to get prepared for this fight? And, you know, being down in Texas, you know, there's always rumors. I'm a little far away, but I've heard some names thrown around that you've been traveling to some different gyms. Is that true?
Sure. I've gotten all over, just take the time between fights to train with anyone and everyone that I can. So absolutely.
Now, I know you have a wonderful program there. You've got a great batch of kids, especially the high school age and early 20s that are coming up in Brazos Valley MMA. And for everybody out there, bvmma.com to find out everything we're talking about.
Right.
Just to switch gears just a tiny bit, how does that work when you're training for a fight of this level and you've still got to step into the school? Do you find that to be any hindrance?
Absolutely. You know, still working a day job, still training other people at night. I've got a fighter fighting this Saturday. I've got a fighter fighting the 20th of October. So I had two fighters fighting last weekend. So we're constantly training other people, trying to train myself, trying to teach classes. So absolutely. If I was full time, I think my game would be at a different level. But I've got to deal with what I got to deal with right now. And I'm hoping that if I can win this title fight, it'll push me to territory where all I can do is train, you know, train full-time, coach full-time, and it'll be a different beast. But right now, it's a difficulty, but it's at least I'm in the gym, you know, at least I'm there. And when I'm coaching other people or teaching classes or dealing with that one job, I'm at least getting work in. So, and I enjoy it. You know, I love the heck out of it. Can I tell a little story?
Yeah, go for it, brother.
I got two of my boys here. We're outside the gym. This is about 3 weeks ago. I told you I had two guys fighting. You heard this one? You read this one?
Well, I haven't heard anything. I haven't publicly said anything.
Yeah, it was
about
the
evil,
Trey, but
yeah, Trey called
Skippy,
me and told me about
Skippy,
it, so
Skippy,
I haven't said anything.
Shut up. Skippy, shut up. I want to hear the story.
So I think it's Tuesday night. They have a fight on Friday. It's Tuesday night. We got done training, and they just got done with a two-hour practice and then conditioning. They're standing outside barefoot in front of the gym. I lock it up. I go home. An hour later, find out these guys are standing there. Someone wanders by the Kroger parking lot, snatches a purse from an old gal, like rips it out of her arm, starts running. They just take off after him, chase him about a half mile around the neighborhood, back up into a parking lot. The guy turns around and says, "Hey, I have a gun," to try and scare him off. So they tackle him, hold him down, put him in a neon belly arm bar, put him in ankle lock, and I've got 235-pound guys holding on to a 205-pound, 6'2" guy, just holding him down, waiting for the cops, going, "Hey, we're trained fighters. I don't want to break your arm, but I will." What are the kids? I mean, the whole time, barefoot, half mile chasing this guy barefoot. The guy throws the purse down. They pick it up and keep chasing it. Just pick it up, carry it with them. So they recover the purse. They give it to the lady. They keep him for the cops there. It was hilarious.
Now that speaks a lot to, I mean, that speaks a lot to what you and your kids are getting instilled in them in that school, you know, in your programs there. I mean, I know from having you on the show previously, plus, you know, having a team member down in College Station, less than five blocks from your studio there, you really push a certain level of and a certain level of responsibility as a citizen with your students. And that shows. It comes through in an incident like this.
Absolutely. You know, we want to have good young men and women, and a lot of that comes out of the Corps of Cadets. You know, we learn to be leaders of character, and we try to pass that on. We want to be good citizens. And we also provide a BVMMA Bible study, so it's nothing forced. It's nothing that we go and push on people, but it's there. I'm about to go in tonight, and it's just an opportunity for us to get together and talk about the things that really matter, you know, outside of the gym. So a lot of the kids and a lot of the people are drawn to that culture too, of just, we care more than just about fighting. But
how have you seen
the community maybe embrace the school and the sport since you opened up BVMMA there?
The community's coming around. It's still sort of a new thing. We're lucky to be in a college town because obviously all the young people just love it. You know, they've grown up with MMA like I did, watching the, you know, first three UFCs when I was you know, 8 years old, and a lot of the kids are the same way. Now the adults and the people are starting to get, you know, into it and check it out, dip their toe in the water. Maybe jiu-jitsu is a good gateway drug, you know, get them in there doing a little jiu-jitsu, and they can see what it's like. And we're starting to do kids MMA, too, and that's becoming more acceptable. We have tons of Taekwondo schools in College Station, but we really only have one or two kids MMA programs, and so that's starting to be a new thing. They want their kids to be well-rounded. They want them to get wrestling. We're proliferating that a lot more because we've got Dave from the north or the side of the Midwest, and then I'm up from Virginia, so we're kind of bringing that down and spreading that out, too. And I think it's taken on. People are respecting it and enjoying it.
Have you, I know last time I talked a little bit about this, but have you had any chance to bring any of the instructors maybe from the Aggie Judo program to do any classes there?
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of kids from the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Club at A&M, and then Daniel Anderson, he just got promoted to purple belt under Jared Quantz, Alva Solis, and then Carlos Machado lineage. And he's been training with us for a long time and just been a real blessing and a big help. Love having him there. So he's brought some of the guys over from the BJJ club, and we have a pretty good relationship with them. I think we rank their guys when they need it, and they have a lot of them fighting for us and training with us.
Well,
we actually went up with him and got combative certified for the Army with him, and then one of our brown belts, Blaine, and hopefully we will eventually have a class where we can teach the Corps cadets Army combatives, and these guys can graduate, you know, the ROTC program and already be certified in Army combatives, level one, level two.
That's really cool.
How much of an honor, I mean, I know that you went to Texas A&M, and, right, well, I mean, I feel like I need to even ask this question because I'm a brain fried after that first segment, but as an A&M graduate, how does it feel being able to reach back in and help that community out?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's great. It's a pretty easy answer. It's fun to be here and be connected with the community. Now, I do start to feel pretty old at 28 in this town, 27, 28, you know, coming up on that. But
I feel you, man. When I lived there, I felt the same way, man. When I was living in College Station, it's like everybody is so young.
Yeah. You know, live with a college kid or half the kids you hang out with, you train with, you watch the fights with, and you realize, man, this guy's 19. You know, I'm a decade older than he is. I've never been the older one here, the adult.
Now, look, you know, I got to say, and I've said it a bunch on the show, I think Legacy is one of the top promotions up and coming, and I feel you
absolutely
going down there and winning this title is going to make a huge statement. But at the same time, how much will you enjoy getting that target on your back?
Getting the what?
How much once you, if you walk away with that title, how much are you going to enjoy being the man everyone comes after?
Oh, getting the target on your back. Yeah, I mean, it'll be great just bringing it home to College Station and, you know, proving that not only do we have something going on here, but all the people that we're working with, I think it'll be pretty rewarding on up. You know, we work with a lot of people in Killeen and Houston and all over, and I think it'll be a great thing to bring back and have that target and quite relish that.
I figured, you know, the previous times we've talked, it just seems like you'd be very welcome to that, you know, to say bring it on, you know. And I hope, and I'll say this for Carl, our producer and boss, I hope that once you snatch this title, we hear a call from somebody like, you know, MSC, you know, call you out and say, look, you're that good, come fight my guy next. So I'm hoping to see, once you click this title, to see some other big-name fights get thrown right at you quickly.
Sure. I'm signed on with First Round Management, and I've got Lou DeBono working for me there, so hopefully that'll come. But we've got to get past this fight first. It is not won yet, so.
That's true. Like I said, I believe you're truly one of the most underrated guys in your weight class in this country. I think people don't realize how truly good you are as a mixed martial artist. You know, I've been blessed. I've seen almost every fight of yours that's available to be seen, you know. Plus, you know, having the insight to see how you train and stuff from Trey. You know, I truly believe that, you know, this title is going to be yours. I truly believe that you're going to be ready for this fight, you know, and I think you should, you know, easily are going to impress a lot of people coming up in November. I think a lot of people are going to have to take notice of your name.
Well, Lord willing, I appreciate the kind words, and Lord willing, I hope that's true. So if I'm the most underrated, though, I'd say Noel's definitely second most underrated. So I think it's going to be an awesome fight. I think people need to come out and see this one.
Dude, there's no doubt about it. I say every legacy because, you know, even their amateur series they do is phenomenal. I mean, they're bringing up some of the best kids in Texas right now and throughout the South, you know, through that program.
Yeah. Mick is running a premier program.
Do you have anybody fighting on that amateur card this weekend?
Not on the Legacy one. We have someone fighting on a couple different other ones right now, but couldn't get on the Legacy for now.
Okay, so as a fighter and a coach, when a hand gets raised, is it the same level of enjoyment for you, or is your fight still a little bit more enjoyable just because it's your own personal conquest? Or do you get maybe more enjoyment out of watching one of your pupils win?
I don't know. They're both pretty nerve-wracking, but I love watching my guys fight, putting them out there. But I would say I'd have to enjoy my own more because when your guys are out there, you can't do anything about it. And so, I mean, I feel like a parent watching your kid out there, and it's just your stomach turns and you can't just amp up the adrenaline and go take care of it, you know, and get rid of those butterflies. You just have to sit there and accept what comes. So I probably enjoy my fights more than it's more nerve-wracking watching other guys fight.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, how much of an advantage do you think it gives your guys, though, as you being a fighter and maybe when you're cornering them, there's a lot of guys that maybe don't have that in-cage experience, or maybe it was a while back for them where they had that in-cage experience. Do you think that your fighters maybe get a little bit more of an advantage since you're actively fighting currently from when you're cornering them and the advice that you give during a fight?
You know, I don't know about during a fight, but definitely before the fight and the coaching, I've seen a difference. So it probably affects it in fight as well. But during the coaching process and the lead up, there's a big change that's happened in my coaching as I've gotten more fights. You know, I've had the last 5 years, I've had all my fights. So, 3 years ago, it was a different level of experience that I brought than it does today. And just a few fights later, I'm like, I can coach from experience. I've been here. This is what happened. This is what will happen. Versus the pure technical knowledge of it.
Well, talking about that, how much have you seen your adaption of the actual fights into your training?
You know, a good amount. You've got the situations. It just becomes more important to train the situations you've been in. And the same thing for any competition. Every time you go to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competition, you get submitted or wind up in a bad situation, or they pull a move you don't know or something you can't counter, you go home and you take that and you work on it. So the more experience, the more things you expose yourself to, obviously that's going to just evolve your training, the situations you put yourself in. But really, even more than that, cross-training with other gyms. You know, going up to Jeff Rexroth's camp before his title fight last month, and then out to Killeen to work with those guys, working either with the Army Combatives or with Jared Quantz, just all those things. You see how other people train, and they'll bring things to the table you never thought of, just simple things. And the more I can steal from other people's ideas, the better ours is going to get, you know. So.
Now, Bubba, when you're working with, like, the Army Combatives, are you teaching them the same things that you would teach your students, or are you teaching them a modified faster version of how to maybe put somebody down?
No, I don't teach Army Combatives at all. I'm going there to learn. So when we do that, it's jiu-jitsu, but it's systematic jiu-jitsu. You know, it's like jiu-jitsu, I should say. It's based on jiu-jitsu and combatives and different things, but it's more systematic. So we're actually learning the way the Army wants to teach their personnel. So it's really an adaptive thing. It's not learning new information. It's learning new ways to teach old information.
Oh, wow. And how do you think that's had an influence on your game?
Well, the biggest thing that the Army Combatives was experience has done for me is when they were training for their tournament, they've got, you know, 15 guys in there that are training for MMA fights. That's what they do. And they train hard, and, you know, they love it, and they live for it. That's their job full time. They get paid by the Army, but they train day in, day out to fight MMA. So just going up there, you've got guys, you know, a whole stable of fighters preparing for fights, and it's just a different environment. So that helps you get amped up.
Now, let me ask you something. As a fighter and a coach and somebody who's trained in a lot of different forms of martial arts, tomorrow me and Lepofsky are going to be going down to the Oregon Athletic Commission for one of their public hearings. They have started pushing an old law or an old regulation that hadn't been pushed for some years here, and I'd like your opinion on it. There's a four fight rule where if you lose four fights in a row, that you're going to be medically disqualified permanently for life from fighting in the state of Oregon. What's your opinion on that and fighter safety?
If you lose four fights in a row?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's as wrong as any other zero tolerance policy. Anytime you take something like that and you make it an absolute, you're wrong. It's just we've gotten it that way as a society because we have such a large society and we need more standards that makes it easier on everyone. But there's too many people and there's too many situations to take something like that and go flat across the board, zero tolerance. So I think, no matter how many fights you lose, if you could have tapped out early four times in a row, not had any damage, never taken a punch, gotten choked out, and be totally fine, let it be up to the individual. Let there be individual freedoms. If they're willing to step back in that cage and put themselves at risk, go for it. If there's a promoter that's willing to put them back in the cage and wants to see them fight, if there are people that want to buy tickets to see that person fight again, go for it.
Well, I totally agree. One of the kids who is kind of the poster boy who we had on last week when we talked about this, his fights that he lost that were consecutively in the state of Oregon. He had won outside the Oregon. They didn't count those because they didn't know about him theoretically. But two of those fights were decision losses in a title fight. The third was, I believe, a title fight as well, which was like a fourth-round loss. But, I mean, the kid's a warrior. The kid's a great amateur fighter. And that's the thing is we're a little, Lepofsky and myself are a little concerned, and that's why we're going to this meeting, is we don't want to see kids getting hurt in unsanctioned fights because they can't fight legally anymore, and we don't want to see kids who are good fighters as an amateur be punished for losing and learning.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, thanks for supporting the community in that. I can get up there. The other thing is that also encourages people to take bad fights or good, easy fights. If this guy's going into title fight after title fight, really pushing himself, taking fights he doesn't know he's going to win, and competing at that level, good on him. That's really discouraging that they would say, hey, yeah, two title fights, you better take a tin can, open up a tomato can before you get back in there and fight again. That's not what people want to see. That's not good for the fighters. It's not good for careers, anything else.
I agree. I had to just get your opinion on that. I do definitely want to get back to you real quick. I'd like to talk real quick, if we could, about, the MMA and the church and that aspect and what you're doing with that program and how it's working.
Okay. Just in general?
Yeah, just in general. I think it's, for a lot of people out there, I think it's a wonderful thing myself, and I think a lot of people out there, especially people who are on the fence about our sport, need to maybe hear what kind of positive thing this is.
Oh, true, true. And there's a lot of backlash from the Christian community as well, but, spirituality is always a big part. It's always been a big part of mixed martial arts, so it's not a required part. We don't do any, Zen mysticism, and we don't need any Christian mysticism, but anyone that steps in that cage has probably made their peace with God at some point or another. It's like being at war. You're thinking about it, you're praying before you go in there, so it's definitely something that makes you feel human and feel mortal. You're going in there, feel invincible when you actually have to think about it and how fragile you really are. So it's definitely in your face more when you're doing combative sports. We are not in your face about it at the gym. It's not something that we have all kinds and all types, and it's not something that we incorporate into the actual main gym, but we have this side group of friends who've just met through the gym and do a little Bible study twice a week. Half of it, we just get together and talk about questions. People ask, why does evil exist? If God is this, what's the proof of God? We have seekers, Bible studies, where they just come and ask questions and we talk to people. And because we have a college community, there's a ton of that. There's a lot of people just searching to know themselves, searching to know their purpose and their meaning, and I think it helps a lot of people, especially because so many people come into fighting to chase down their demons, you know, or to get away from them, just because, you know, for whatever it is, they're fighting. They think they can get it out physically, and, you know, you can't. You can fight for a long time. You can get beat up a lot, and you can beat up a lot of other people, but, you know, I had one of my guys recently say, I really need to get in the cage because I got a lot of demons to leave behind there, and, you know, he came right out of the cage and said, you know what, every one of them followed me back out. So it's just kind of a realization that there is more to life than just the physical, just what we're going through here. And as a community and as a group of brothers and sisters and people in the fight community, we carry that over into, you know, those of us that are seeking or are believers in Jesus Christ. We carry it over and we talk about it and just build each other up in that as well. And it's just a great community. I think it strengthens the gym. I think it strengthens our faith. It's, you know, it helps that everyone's not there trying to be the biggest badass or have the biggest ego or, you know, just beat people up to beat people up or be a bully. It's a great culture all around.
Bubba, I got to tell you, I once again, I'm glad you came back on. I think what you're doing down there in College Station with BVMMA and what you're doing with your own career are both just great, special things. And, you know, I know you're a very humble guy and you don't look to the future, but I'll do it for you. I totally believe we're going to see you next month with your hand raised, and you're going to get that target on your back, and we're going to get to see you grow. I think so many fans listening tonight are going to go out and check out your videos and go do research on you and find out about you and see that you're truly an amazing fighter, and you're going to be at that next level sooner than most people think. And before we wrap up the show, I want to give you time to give shout-outs. You know, anything, your gym location, Twitter, Facebook, any fight dates, whatever you want, run at it.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a Facebook you can like if you're out there looking at the videos and things, and hopefully this will blow up. We've got a couple sponsors, Cellucor Supplements. They've been with us for a long time. They've been a great sponsor and really giving us good supplements. Versa Carry is getting big. If you do any concealed carry, go check them out. And then, you know, I think my whole purpose here in fighting, whether I win November 16th in the title fight or not, you know, I hope I do, and I think God will do that. But whether I do or not, I think the whole purpose of this is just to have a platform to say, Jesus Christ is the Son of God. I believe he died for me. I believe he died for you. And put that out there. Just go seek him out.
Bubba, thank you so, so much for taking the time. I know you're getting, you know, focused on, you know, so many things, including this big fight coming up. So good luck, brother, from all of us at Madhouse. I really wish you the best and all your kids fighting this weekend as well. Everybody get out there and support Bubba. Find him on Facebook. Go by and say hi to his gym. You know, go by, try out one of his classes, you know. It might be for you. You might love it, you know. Get out and support some local MMA this weekend, everyone.
Oh, man, it's a lot of fun. Hey, thanks for all your support. And one other thing, we have a guy fighting on October 20th in the Mortal Kombat, Matt Stewart. So go check him out, too. He's making his pro debut.
At a Mortal Kombat?
That's going to be up in like the Humble area, right?
Yep, Humble area, Mortal Kombat. He's 3-0 amateur. He's going out for his pro debut, so 205 tournament. Should be fun.
Bubba, we really appreciate you taking out the time tonight, man, and spending a half hour with us here at MMA Madhouse.
Hey, thanks for talking to me. Appreciate you guys. Y'all have a great night.
You too,
brother.
Thanks. Man, I told you, man, the guy's legit, dude. I think he's going to kill the guy on the ground, truthfully. That's my opinion, you know. Like he said, he hasn't fought the fight yet, but yeah, everybody out there needs to be paying attention come November 16th for Legacy 15, man, because he's going to kill it.
I do agree there.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, Carl, I know you got stuff to do, and I've got to run all the way to the house. So,
my God.
Do what you got to do.
I got things to do, yeah. I got things to do.
Carl's got bills to pay. Loads to blow.
Bills to pay, yeah. I would like to, yeah. I'm dedicating our song tonight to our so-called caller named Eric. But before I do that, I'm going to give a shout-out to our lovely sponsors. Brass Bound World, Crawl Base,
Clinch Custom Mouth Guard, Razorware, Intimidation Clothing, Global MMA Consultant, No Pain, Just Glory, Central Pork Strike, Combat Sports Insurance, Vision Smoke Shop, 24NLV, Draco Sports, Triumph Fitness, and Major Nightclub. Okay, Eric, this one's for you.
TankCrimes.com. Check out what they've got.
Hey, I just want the listeners to know that when Skippy says he's got to run all the way to the house, it's 8 feet across the breezeway, people. 8 feet across the breezeway. It ain't like he's running a quarter mile
well,
or even 40 yards.
No, I mean, it's not far. I might, but, you know, I just didn't know how long it would take.
Carl, you knew Carl was picking a special song for Eric.
Dude, hey, by the way, snap your fingers, snap your neck, prong, dude. Come on, man. That's just a great song. I don't care who you are.
Well, we're going to keep up with the theme of local fighters from around the country tonight, or organizations, and we've got Sam Oropeza from Briarcliff, Pennsylvania. Sam, are you with us?
I'm here, ready to rock. What's going on, guys?
Not much, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Just wrapped up an awesome training session at New Jersey Martial Arts, and sitting at home, and, you know, my diet is kicking in hardcore right now, so just got done eating, you know, some vegetables and all that. That good stuff. Sometimes you wish it was a cheeseburger, but you got to sacrifice.
Hey, it's always that first cheeseburger after a fight is always the best one, right?
Oh man, it is. It really is. That's the first thing I do. It's usually a bacon cheeseburger, so you got to throw some bacon on there.
Oh yeah, bacon makes everything better, right?
Oh, it's nature's candy, man. Of course it does.
Nature's candy. I love it.
Now, Sam, is New Jersey, is that your new home base?
Yeah, I started training at New Jersey Martial Arts right before my last fight. But, you know, like, where I live is right outside Philadelphia, so, you know, it's basically the tri-state area. I mean, I can get to Delaware and New Jersey in about, you know, 20 minutes, so we're kind of all real close to each other.
A little bit different than out here on the West Coast. We're hours apart from each other.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, California's a big state. Been out there, man. Very very beautiful. Been out to Washington State also, too, man. It's awesome out there.
Now, you're coming off a big win at Matrix 5 against Ong. Song, I think is how you say it. How did you feel during that fight, and how did everything go that night for you?
You know, it went good if we look at it from, you know, getting the win, and that's always my goal every fight is to get the win and always get the finish. But it was a 10-month layoff. I don't like to take that much time in between fights, but, you know, I was coming off a loss before that fight in Bellator, which was, you know, it was a tough loss to deal with. You know, no, losing isn't fun, but, you know, a lot of changes had happened in my life. I went back to work full-time, you know. It was the first fight ever in my home state. So I had a lot of pressure on me, and, you know, I just feel the anxiety build up during the fight. So it felt good to get it out of the way with and to get back on the right track with the win. Wasn't exactly, you know, what I would describe as my best fight, but it was a good win over a very tough and game opponent. So, you know, it was definitely a confidence booster for sure.
Which fight would you consider to be your best performance in your eyes, Sam?
Honestly, I would have to say my Strikeforce fight against Don Carlo Klaus. I'd say it was my best performance because I was coming off a loss that fight against, you know, a solid wrestler. The guy I was fighting, Don, was a 2-time New York State champion, you know, wrestled Division I in college. And, you know, I stuck to my game plan. I trained very hard for that fight. You know, it was like everything came together that night. And, you know, I think that's the best I've ever looked. But, you know, I believe I'm going to change that October 13th when I fight in Harris, Philadelphia.
I agree. I totally agree. I think this is a, you know, like I said, I think this is a tough fight. You know, Chase Owens, I think it's a good test to see if you're still progressing the way you want to progress. How do you feel, you know, about, you know, stepping onto this stage? You know, it's a good stage, but you've been on big stages before. Do you have any of that, you know, adrenaline dump feel, you know, before a big show like this?
Yeah, you know what it is? It's, man, like, I don't know if you've ever seen some of my fight videos. If you notice, you can really hear the crowds really loud. I sell a lot of tickets, especially when I'm, you know, close to where I live. And I would definitely say that last fight, you know, against Ong was, you know, I kind of had that adrenaline dump. It came in real hot and heavy in the first round looking for that finish because, you know, you have your friends watching, you know, your brothers and sisters watching, and you're in your home state and, you know, you want to get that finish and look awesome. And, you know, I'm glad I had that fight because it really showed me, you know, I have to relax. I have to keep my composure. You know, there's no way you know, as hard as I like to go, and I like to keep a fast pace, but I can't. You can't let your emotions get involved in a fight, because that's really when they talk about adrenaline dumps. That's where I believe it really comes from. When you get your, when you let your emotions take over, and you know, Fedor said it the best, man. You should go into the fight the same way you walk in to get a haircut, and that really is the truth.
But doesn't that really depend on how cute your hairdresser is, Sam? Well, you know, if you got a really ugly hairdresser, you might not walk in there with the same attitude as if she's, like, super hot.
Yeah, you know what, man, you're right. I would be actually pretty cool if I had a good-looking hairdresser. Luckily for me, my hairdresser's name's Bruno, so, I mean, I guess you can picture what he looks like.
So you're not going in there for the eye candy, I take it. He must do a pretty good cut.
Yeah, well, you know, I everyone always makes fun of me because I wear those little spandex shorts, but, you know, I do that for the crowd. I call them the crowd pleasers, you know what I mean? So, you know, I want to keep them happy. There's a lot of women out there when I go out there and fight, so, you know, I just want to make sure they feel the good.
Now, watch out for them fight floozies, man. You know, there's some of them leeches out there. You got to be careful.
For sure, man, for sure.
Hey,
now,
Sam,
me and Skippy were having a debate. Are you fighting Owens or Rigmodden?
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's my opponent just got switched. You know, I feel bad for Chase because he kind of got a tough card dealt to him. I don't really want to say his injury, you know, on the air, but, you know, it's kind of a tougher injury to come back from. You know, it could take some time to heal. So my opponent just got switched last week to Rigmodden. I believe it's pronounced Rigmodden. I might be saying it wrong, but, I mean, he's a very game opponent, tough guy. It's going to be my first time playing in the Southpaw, so, you know, I'm looking forward to this opportunity.
And he normally fights weight class above you?
Yeah, you know, he usually fights at 185, and I even told the promoter, you know, because I was grateful that we got an opponent to accept it on, you know, 3 weeks is still a short notice, and I told him, I said, man, I'll fight at 180, I'll fight at 175, but they, you know, he wants to fight at 170, so, you know, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, did that change much for you in your camp when you found out you were switching to a southpaw, or did you just say, I'm going to stick with my original plan?
You know, that's funny. That's a thing that I've been dealing with since I first started training, and it's like, you know, I got to really ask myself that question. What is waking me up every day, you know, when I wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go run, to go train hard? And it's not my opponent that wakes me up. It's my desire to get better, and it's my desire to be a champion in this sport. And, you know, I always look at, you know, when I'm training for a fight, you know, I'm fighting Anderson Silva, or I'm fighting John Jones, or, you know, Fedor, you know, the greats in the sport. And, I don't really get too caught up in my opponent. I'm lucky to have, you know, a lot of guys in my training camp. I have a lot of southpaws. I have a lot of, you know, orthodox style. A lot of guys who are just boxers, wrestlers, kickboxers. So, you know, I switched it up a little bit, but, you know, I'm still fighting a guy, you know, same dimensions. You know, the only difference is instead of his left foot in the front, it's his right foot in the front.
Good point. Well, you know, I think, you know, if someone was to look on paper and compare, you know, you versus your new opponent, they'd be like, this is, you know, an easy victory for him. How do you keep it from becoming that when you see that you do have that much more experience and that much more high-class, high-level fights? How do you still keep and maintain yourself from going, this is an easy victory?
Man, I'll tell you this much, and this is from experience, and this is from getting to train with, you know, I'm not a name dropper, but, you know, I've been to a lot of different training camps where there are guys who are, you know, at the highest level in the UFC and, you know, other organizations like Bellator and everything. And you really get to see when you train with these guys, man, there really isn't sometimes that big of a difference between you and somebody who's, you know, I'm not sitting there saying I'm this great, unbelievable person, but, you know, you realize that, you know, if you have a strong desire and if you want to fight and you want to win, you know, I always say records are for DJs, and I really think it's the truth, you know. So I always look at this guy. He took the fight. Maybe sometimes people take the fight because they want the money, but, when I take a fight, it's because I believe deep down inside I can win. So I believe Richard has, you know, that thought in his head that, hey, man, I can win this fight. You know, I'm going to take it. So, you know, when I'm fighting a game opponent, a hungry opponent, trust me, man, I'm training hard. I love to have that edge. You know, it's something that I always think about before I go to bed. You know, what can I do tomorrow to make myself better than what I was yesterday?
Sam, how much of your training is mental? Because when I was researching you, like, one of the things I liked, and I read it in, on Sam's Facebook page, everybody, you can go to Sam Oropeza, like his Facebook page. Let's try and get him up to 2,500 people here pretty quick. But on it, you wrote, you feel the best way to describe yourself is to start by saying, I believe the most powerful tool we have is our mind. How much training do you do mentally or through visualization on top of your physical training?
Man, you know, it really is a huge difference between the amount of time I spend mentally training and physically training. You know, I'm constantly, you know, at night, I meditate. When I wake up in the morning, I meditate. And, you know, I have certain sounds and vibrations. This is going to make me sound like a weirdo, but I listen to while I sleep, you know what I mean? Because I believe, you know, the frequencies and the vibrations that you listen to can make you stronger, can help you heal, can help you recover. So, you know, I guess if I were to look at it at a percentage-wise, you know, if I spend 20% of the time physically training, the other 80% is spent mentally training and preparing myself because, you know, there's no worse feeling in the world when you're in a fight and you start to hear those voices in your head that say, man, you're not going to make it, you know, that when you have that desperation feeling. And, you know, I felt that before. I felt that before a lot of times. And you really have to have the power to overcome. You know, I look at some of my greatest fighters of all time, you know, like a George Foreman came back in his 40s and became a world champion because, you know, obviously, physically, he wasn't all there, but mentally, he was all there. And, you know, I believe that's really going to give you the edge against your opponent.
No, I agree. And I'm also a firm believer in the use of binaural beats when I'm asleep as well. I feel that
that's exactly what I listen to. Very cool.
Yeah, I feel I get a lot cleaner sleep, and I'm actually allowed to, like, remember some of the dreams that I have. Do you take any, like, nootropics or anything like that?
You know what, man? That's funny you said that. I was really thinking about ordering. You know, I was looking at. You know, I follow Joe Rogan. I mean, the guy's absolutely hysterical. His podcast got me cracking up.
Yeah.
And I know he talks about him a lot. It's something that I wanted to try. Not to flip the interview around, but do you use them?
Actually, I have. I just placed an order on Friday for my first order of Alpha Brain, so I'm going to give it a run for the money. I've been listening to Joe. I listen to Joe a lot myself too. And so I've been, like, hearing him, and I'm like, man, I'm going to try it. And then Friday I was just like, you know what, it's just time to do it. So I'm just waiting for my shipment of Alpha Brain to get here. I got 90 pills on the way, and I hope that they work as well as he says.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm going to – you know what, you kind of lit a fire under my butt right now. I think if I get off the phone with you, I'm going to order a couple of them.
Well, you know, everything he says about it, you know, on the podcast, you know – If even a percentage of it's true, so many people are missing the boat on how to get your brain so much healthier and so much more active in a correct manner, you know. And obviously being a healthy individual helps and doing things like meditation and exercising. But, yeah, I'm a total believer. You know, I think, you know, what he's said about that on his show is phenomenal. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful, you know, natural supplement, you know, that you can take.
And for sure, man, especially nowadays, you know, everything's processed, you know, they make everything, you know, it's almost like we're eating fake stuff, you know, and drinking fake stuff when really, you know, that's a big part of my diet, you know, I juice all, you know, fresh organic vegetables and everything like that. You know, I try to keep it, you know, a real natural, real raw diet.
And how difficult is that for you to, when you go out with your, you know, your buddies or your girl or something, do you have to look for specific style restaurants?
Yeah, you know what? a lot of my friends know not to hang out with me when it comes to eating food. But you know what? And I'm not this righteous guy who's, you know, man, you know, one of my biggest things is I love Chick-fil-A, too. You know, it's hard to drive past a Chick-fil-A and not stop in and get a chicken sandwich. But, you know, I mean, you realize the difference when you're training, and, you know, that's what really motivates me to keep a diet cleaner. And when I fall off my diet, I see a noticeable. I mean, it's so noticeable, you know, and that's what really keeps me motivated on staying on the diet. I got, the best girlfriend in the world who is also really big on health and nutrition, and she's a nurse and all that good stuff. So, you know, I got a lot of people in my corner that are helping me out with it.
Is she your cut person too, Sam?
Excuse me?
Does she do your cut work?
No, no. You know what she does? She gives me the IVs after weigh-ins because, man, that is just a, you know, that's the best way to rehydrate. I mean, really, I mean, that's how they bring people who are, you know, almost dead back to life. And, you know, cutting that weight really sucks, man, you know, especially the last 2 days of your weight cut, you know, it's like, yeah, I can't really, you know, sit there and say it's the worst thing in the world because, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of things that people go through every day that are worse than that. But, you know, it's a crappy feeling, though.
As a professional athlete, it's the worst thing in the world. That's it.
You're
the
right.
There's no football players or basketball players or any other kind of sport out there, unless they're in a combat sport where they go through the things that fighters go through in the 48 to 72 hours before a competition.
Oh, for sure, man. You know, that last day, you know, I mean, the last hour is the worst. You know, you're sitting there, and the athletic commission's always late, you know what I mean? And it's somebody who's supposed to be in the show doesn't show up until 10 minutes late, so, you know, you're every second, you know, while you're at weigh-in, feels like an hour.
Now, do you tell your team not to eat on weigh-in day until you can eat, or do they punish you and eat anyway?
Yeah, you know, you want to know what I do? And people think I'm crazy for this. Like, my last, like, you know, starting on Tuesday, this Tuesday coming up, I watch the cooking. I watch the food channel. I don't... It is like, people are like, I don't know how you can do that. And I'm like, this is the closest thing to eating food. It's just, like, I get thoughts in my head, like, after rains, I should try that. You know what I mean? Or, you know, it almost takes my mind off. It's like, I'm eating food by watching it almost.
Now, Sam, I'm kind of getting the feeling you have, like, a lot of science maybe in your training. When you're mentioning the IVs, do you have, like, a really scientific look at your training and the way you break it down?
You know what? I used to. I used to have this whole method, and it was like you start to believe it in your head that, you know, I have to do this, and this in this sequential order, and then I win. And then you really realize that, you know, a lot of that's just bullcrap, man. It's the truth. And I started to realize now that, you know, the way I'm going to get great and the way I'm going to get better and the way I'm going to get into the big shows is I got to show up to the gym, you know, every day. I take Friday off. And I got to bang on those doors of exhaustion. You know, I got to, you know, I got to train hard. I got to push myself. And I have to have the right eyes watching me. You know, I have great coaches, Eric Carner at Knoxmoy Gym and Marco Perrazzo of NJMA. And I listen to them because, you know, I put my faith and trust in them. But what's most important is I listen to myself. You know, when I feel my body maybe had too much, or when I feel like in my head I want to go another round, I go another round. You know, it's funny because a lot of these people who make up these programs and this, you know, whatever they have, never really even fought before. So really, they don't even know what you're going through to get to where you want to be. And it's, you know, I really believe yourself is a great teacher. So when you listen to yourself and you got the right coaches behind you, you know, sometimes you need to throw those programs out the window. And, you know, do everything you can to win.
Now, Sam, do you guys do a lot of heavy sparring during your training, or do you just focus more on technique?
So my whole thing is exactly, man, technique. You know, you have to, I wasn't born with a lot of natural talent. So for me to get to the level where I want to be, I got to work on my skill every day, and I got to pound on it. But on Saturdays is our hard sparring, and maybe it's not the best idea, but Sundays I spar too, because it's the weekend, you know, I have a full recovery after, you know, each of those days. You know, on Monday through Thursday, you know, it's 2 to 3 days of training, so I don't really like to have hard sparring on those days, because your body gets broken down and everything like that. But Saturday and Sunday is hard sparring, and I always, you know, try to get bigger, stronger guys to spar and to hit me hard, because, you know, we wear headgear, we wear shin guards, knee pads, elbow pads, and, you know, the best way to simulate a fight is to go as, you know, to push the pace, get your heart rate up, and get somebody who really sometimes when you're 5 weeks out from the fight, 4 weeks out from the fights, has no regards for you.
Is it hard? Do you have to bring guys in to do that, Sam, or are they there in the gym with you on a regular basis?
What I love is my trainer, Eric, uses this statement. He calls it breaking your toys. And, you know, I have training partners that, you know, they're my friends. They're, you know, they help me get better, and I need them in the gym. And I'm not saying this like I'm some dangerous, badass guy, but, you know, when I'm sparring them, there's certain things I won't do. But, you know, we bring other people in from different gyms, and it's like we use the expression, now you can break your toys, you know. Because they're going to try doing the same exact thing to you. You know, I've been in those situations where, especially, you know, going to the Philadelphia boxing gyms and just boxing, they don't really give a crap about you. You know, these people, they're there to get themselves better. So, you know, it's a give or take, but, you know, there's times where you just got to, you know, not feel too sorry for the guy you're sparring with and, you know, really push yourself.
Now, Sam, you mentioned a funny thing there, training in Philadelphia boxing gym. Boxing has traditionally been the sport of choice amongst combat practitioners in Philadelphia. How has the reception towards mixed martial arts been in that area? I know a few years ago Bernard Hopkins was kind of against it, and I've kind of seen him kind of change his stance on that as time has proceeded. But how has the majority of the people there accepted MMA in that area?
It's funny because, you know, you go there and, you know, when I first started there, they would make fun of me. You know, they'd be like, oh, who's this MMA guy? And they want to come up to you and tell you, like, they think it's gay, and they're like, oh, you guys do all that hugging, I don't get it. But when you show up to a gym and you show that you can fight, they start to respect you, you know. They start to, it's funny, you know, nobody would say hi to you when you first walked in, but then when you spar people, they see how tough you are, they see you have a desire to get better. You know, they start to respect you. And I believe, you know, I know you guys are out on the West Coast, but in Philadelphia, you know, especially, you know, right where I live, we have a reputation of being tough. You know, we really pride ourselves on it. And it's not really me saying I'm better than you, but it's you know, we want to show up, we want to work hard, and, you know, we want to win. And a lot of people have that mentality in MMA in Philadelphia, and they have it in boxing. And I feel like lately people have been getting along a lot better. But, you know, egos are always involved, and that's a terrible thing, you know. You know, the male ego, I always tell people when they ask me, every guy thinks he's an expert on fighting and picking up chicks. So, you know, you get a couple guys who's hard to break through their egos, but, I've been getting a lot warmer receptions when I go to the boxing gym.
That's awesome, man. I mean, unfortunately, Sam, we're about to run out of time on this segment, but I want you to give a shout-out to all your sponsors, training places, gyms, how people can follow you on Twitter or Facebook, anything like that, man. Take a run at it, bro.
Hey, so follow me on Facebook. You know, it's Sam Arpiza. You'll see the picture of me throwing that giant left kick. It looks like my foot is about size, you know, the size of Shaquille O'Neal's foot. I want to thank my coaches, all my training partners at NJMA, Marco Perrazzo, my coach, all my training partners and students at Nakamoy Gym, Eric Carner, thank you for everything. And, please come to Harris, Philadelphia, October 13th, and you're going to have a great time. You're going to get to watch a great fight. And thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to talk. I really appreciate it.
Man, we appreciate you taking the time out, Sam. We wish you the best of luck next weekend. And hopefully we can have you back on, man. I feel like I could have talked to you for about 3 hours here tonight.
Right?
I feel the same exact way, man. You know, hey, please, you know, upcoming fights, I love the press. And, you know, whatever I can do to help you guys out, I'm willing to do.
Yeah, and I'll send you a message, man, on how that alpha brain goes for me.
Oh, please, and send me the link for that so I can repost this, the show.
You got it, buddy.
And everybody,
all right, thank you guys.
FE Cage War, Saturday, October 13th at Harris Casino. Doors open at 6, first fights at 7. Let's get out and support some local MMA, everyone.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Have a great one, guys.
You too, bro.
Yeah,
man, what an awesome
cool
guy, dude. That was man, he was high energy, Skippy. You probably weren't able to keep up.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. You know I'm dragging butt tonight, but that guy, I mean, I agree. We could have easily spent another hour with him. He was super exciting. But, I'm super excited about our next guest. you know, he's got an amazing history in martial arts that a lot of people out there probably don't know. So I'm really excited to bring Eric in. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, welcome to MMA Madhouse. You're off with Lapaki and Skippy.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Good, thank you.
Well, let's start off by having you introduce yourself to everybody and maybe give a little bit of history about yourself.
Okay, my name is Eric Shingu, and I'm about 54 years old, so I'm pretty old school. And my academy is in Stockton, California, and I was born and raised here. I went to college in Sacramento, which is just above Stockton, and so I've pretty much been here my whole life. Started martial arts training when I was 10, and it was just something that when I started, I grew up in an era in the 60s and 70s that were a lot different from now, I just put it that way. And so it was almost really a necessity for me to learn how to protect myself. And I had health issues, too, when I was a kid growing up, you know, being premature at birth and so forth. So, you know, from the time I was 10, I've been in an academy and a gym, and ended up going to school, getting a job, and returning back to martial arts to teach full-time and actually do it as a profession.
Now, you have an amazing, amazing career. I mean, you know, you've done so much, and you're a world-renowned instructor. I mean, and when I say world-renowned, I mean, I believe you've internationally you've gone to, like, Venezuela, Canada, Brazil, I mean, all over the world to instruct. You know, how does that, you know, looking back on it, how great does that make you feel?
Well, fantastic, but I think what was the most important thing that I got out of the travel and my martial arts training was it really opened my eyes to different cultures, to people. I've always, like I said, when I was growing up, it was pretty abusive at times where we lived. And so it was really nice to go and see other cultures and people that were really wanted to learn what we were learning here in the States and what I learned in Okinawa. And so just, you know, the different cultures that really, I think, helped me as a person. And that was really the most important thing. I mean, it made me a better person to see how other people live. It also enriched my martial arts because I realized that over here in the United States, all the best instructors want to come here. I mean, if you look at any of the arts, the best instructors end up coming here to the United States because this is where they can earn the best living. So, you know, what's probably the most obvious and what most people know about are the Gracie family. You know, Hickson Gracie, Horion, Hoist, all of them came over here and did real well with their martial art and spread it because over here is where they can make a good living at it. And also over here, the American people were very hard workers. And I was told that by many people that have come over to train with me. They said, gosh, you guys, you train all the time. And I said, well, doesn't everybody? And they were, no, it's you know, it's not like that so much where we come from. It's, you know, it's in our culture, but you guys really train hard out here in the States. So, you know, our competitiveness, I think, has a lot to do with that. But the travel was really priceless for me. I mean, it made me a better person in every aspect of my life.
Now, you, and, you know, forgive me if I, you know, pronounce this wrong, but you're a fifth-degree black belt in Okinawan Goju Ryu Karate, correct?
Goju Ryu, yes,
Goju Ryu. Let me ask you, today's combat sports has seemed to go so much towards the way of MMA. How do you still keep this passion and keep, you know, teaching these kids a more specific style instead of an all-around, you know. So many gyms have gotten away from just being a karate or just being a taekwondo or just being a boxing or, you know. It's now you see MMA gyms popping up on every corner. You still teach the traditional karate, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, the way that's kind of, that's a really good question. There are MMA gyms popping up all over. You know, this whole thing with the mixed martial arts, you know, in the past, people, when it came to hand-to-hand self-defense, it was mixed martial arts. Everybody traditionally learned to deal with strikes, takedowns, and grappling. I mean, it got real specific later on because you wanted, you know, certain people wanted to just do striking, certain people just wanted to do grappling. So it kind of segregated itself, I don't know, due to style or business or whatever the reason was. But in the past, all the different distances of self-defense were addressed. So the way I was taught, and I was always cross-trained with grappling as well as my karate. My family, my mother's family, they're a judo jiu-jitsu family, and I'm actually one of the second one in the family to actually go with a striking art. They were real partial to the grappling. But I was always taught, and I've stuck with this because it's really helped me in life, and it's what I feel is true, is that you really need to go deep with one system or one style of martial art, and then you cross-train off of that rather than just being a jack-of-all-trades, master of none. And I've always believed with the kids that have come in and have done competitive fighting in my gym, I look at where they come from. So if they're a wrestler, I will make them do more boxing, more karate-style techniques, but I never pull them away from the wrestling. I want them to keep the wrestling sharp. As wise, if someone comes in and they're a Muay Thai fighter or they're a karate fighter, I want them to keep those skills because that's what brought them to the show. And then we cross-train them in jiu-jitsu or whatever they need, whether it be for self-defense or for sport. And the other thing that has kept me going is I do a lot of fitness now. I've got a large clientele that does kind of a hybrid fitness with me, that I do a lot of martial arts mixed in with fitness. So I do a lot of weights mixed in with plyometrics, mixed in with karate, with some jiu-jitsu drills that are safe, where nobody's going to get hurt. And usually the people will look at certain things and they'll say, God, I really like that punching. I want to get into a karate class, or I want to get into your kickboxing class, or, you know, I like the close-in contact and a lot of the movement, the floor work that you do. You know, I want to come into a jiu-jitsu class. And so everybody that I have, my clientele, the people that want something specifically first, and then they realize, hey, I'm going to cross train a little bit because I don't know how to punch or I don't know how to grapple, so I'm going to kind of add this to my game after they trained with me for a couple of months. I've got practically my whole karate class now is made up of jiu-jitsu students that wanted to learn how to strike and evade a strike to get in. So that's kind of the route that it's gone for me. And I know that, like you said, that these other gyms are opening up and they're kind of offering strictly MMA and not doing what I do.
Well, and, you know, talking about what you do, you know, with the IOGF, IOGKF, they're still doing regional tournaments. Now, I can't honestly say how successful and big they were in maybe the late 80s, early 90s, but you just did one, I believe, up in Idaho recently, and it was a very successful one. So are you still seeing a good growth or at least a steady pace with those tournaments?
You know what? I think that they're back on the upsurge. And you know what? But it's so funny you talk about this MMA. Really, what has helped put karate back on the map with people like Lyoto Machida, people like that, that people are going, hey, that stuff kind of works. I mean, this guy's distancing is great, blah, 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 blah. It's basic karate, right? It's basic stand-up. And going back to the IOGKF and late 80s and 90s when I was still fighting, that was probably the peak of that organization's fighting, we had, I fought in the World Tournament in 94, and there were 40 countries there. And the whole Eastern Bloc that came over, the Russians and the Georgians from the Republic of Georgia and the surrounding Eastern European Bloc, they were basically pro fighters. So anyone that came over, and I can remember feeling sorry for some of the U.S. instructors here that were doing it part-time, they basically came over and just knocked everybody out. And, just K-1 style hits, good night. And for that period of time, it was very competitive. That was some of the strongest fighting I ever seen. I remember looking for, we were looking for somebody's teeth one day. There was just blood all over the ring. There was no, it was at San Diego State University, and they had towels out there, and they were mopped because one of my guys from Bakersfield that I knew had gotten beat up so bad by one of the Venezuelan fighters. We were looking for his teeth because we didn't want anyone to step on it. And about midway through it, he's telling us, forget it. I think I swallowed it. So, I mean, back then it was, and, we didn't have to worry about, at that time, the Athletic Commission, California Athletic Commission, we hadn't really caught on because we were running it off of just the old karate insurance. I could say this now because it's all done with, but we were running it off of the karate insurance. And, we were having basically full contact fights, it was, I had a great time. I mean, I feel bad for some of the people that were not really prepared for it. When I saw those Europeans and the South Americans come over, first thing I told my wife when I was there, I said, these guys are pros. And I was fortunate enough to have a lot of, just bare-knuckle training when I was growing up. And some boxing training that I knew how to take a shot and deliver one that, I did fine. And I was just having a great old time because, I'm finally in a tournament that, this is what I want. I want this full contact stuff. I mean, this was before, in fact, I think just the year or two that I had retired and started just doing jiu-jitsu, I think the Ultimate had come over with Ken Shamrock had a studio down the street, and I had just started training with Cesar Gracie in the mid-90s.
Eric, what was it that led you more towards the striking art than following in your family's footsteps with the grappling arts?
Well, my family has a martial arts background that probably dates close to 500 years back. And in fact, the Maeda, if you do the history on the Gracie family, the Maeda that came over, Japan was doing some colonization over in Brazil because they found that there was less racism there. So they were able to start colonies in Brasilia and Sao Paulo, places like that. And so my grandfather's relative was the Maeda that actually showed Gastão Gracie as a favor the Japanese jiu-jitsu, and then they developed it from there. So when my grandfather started training me, I was about 9 or 10 for a period of time. I had all my uncles training me, and they had gotten me about a year or two of judo and some Japanese jiu-jitsu under my wing. And they, I guess they had this discussion. I was a little guy, I don't know. And one of my uncles says, we were talking about this, and you're a really small kid, and we really think it's in your best interest to learn how to strike. And you'll always be able to come back to grappling as you get older. But they said the striking has to be developed for you, and we could develop some speed and get you stronger so you can have a good punch. And I had one uncle that was a Golden Glove boxer in the service and served in the 442, and another one that was very good judoist, got his black belt at the Kodokan in Japan, and wanted to box, but he didn't quite have the hand speed. So I think they talked it over, and they said, we really want to get you started in striking. So that's where I went first. So I liked it, so I just stayed with that for many, many years. you know, did a little bit of judo on the side, and then when I retired from the stand-up competition, then I just dove right into the jiu-jitsu and did that, you know, went through that system.
And is the would you think that maybe the Goku Ryu is the best form of karate for mixed martial arts?
You know, it goes down to the practitioner. You know, I'm partial to it because that's what I do, and it fits my body type. It's the Goju Ryu style is great for self-defense because it's if you go to someone that's really been traditionally trained, I went and trained with Mori Ohigona from Okinawa, and he's really the kind of the root of it. He is the root of it. And you really learn all the self-defense, the way to use your hands for not only striking but for, you know, gouging, pulling, ripping, all that kind of stuff. So for a self-defense application, for me, it's great. And I really can't speak for the other styles because, you know, I've studied just that. The other styles that I've been around, they've been around me in the sports sense. So I don't really know what they do as far as strictly self-defense. I mean, as far as sports fighting, the Shotokan people are fantastic. I mean, they probably have the fastest frontal attack I've ever seen. They're great athletes. They're usually big, lean guys, and they can just really explode on you. But for me, my body type and the depth of the kata that the Goju Ryu has with all the self-defense moves and the science of it really fits me. So anyone that wants to learn Goju Ryu, I just really dive into it, just start taking every bit of it that I've researched and worked with them on it. So, you know, you get a lot of people that are your students and go, oh, this is the best, and that's great. I wouldn't say that maybe it's the best style. I'm just saying that maybe in this area I've researched my style the most. So that's probably a better way to put it rather than saying this style is better than another style.
Most of them.
Eric, before I jump into my next question, we got a buddy of yours, Steve Smith from Kumite Fight Gear. He's going to join us for the last bit of the show. Steve, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, thanks. Hey, Sensei.
Hi, Steve.
I've got to ask, Eric, as a fan who grew up in Europe in the 80s, following, you know, kickboxing, you know, in the whole world of the K-1 there, I'm really curious, what's the difference about with the Okinawan freestyle kickboxing? Can you tell me?
Is that for Steve?
No, that's for you, sir.
Oh, okay. From the sport aspect, there really is no difference. I think when you look at the K-1, in fact, I was just at the K-1 Grand Prix in L.A., I was just so thrilled to be there because I've never been to a K-1 event. I tell everybody they are the cream of the crop for stand-up kickboxing. They just are because they've got a great meld of what I used in my style. One of the things that when I was competing was, you know, I thought I had pretty decent kicks, but the Europeans and the Japanese, I mean, I was close, but I was not as good by far. I was kind of in that class range, but they were above. So what I did was I used a lot of American boxing to get in, and I always threw my kicks off my hands. And what you see in what is developed with the K-1, like you see with Masato and Burakawa and these great, great K-1 champions, Andy Sauer, all these great champions, is these guys got hands. I mean, they've got boxing ability. And when Burakawa first came, he was a big Muay Thai style fighting champion, you know, where the fighting's a little bit different. You know, more kicks, they use their elbows, and their types are a little different. You know, the K-1, it's just really, it's, you know, the rules are a little bit different, and it's fast-paced. It's very fast. But if you look at all the successful K-1 fighters, they have incorporated boxing. Burakawa has now incorporated boxing. Once he started doing that, he just became a monster. You know, he was getting one-punch knockouts. So as far as the difference, there really is not. what the difference is with that level that you're talking about in Europe and the Tier 1, they're just the best. They are simply the best in the world. And like I said, I was just thrilled to see them fight. Rick Rufus was in there 46 years old. I mean, and just he didn't get touched. I mean, how good is that, you know, for the old guys?
Oh, he looked impressive. We all here are big fans, so we were all very much tuned in to watch those fights. And you know, Steve, you just had the great pleasure of having a seminar with Sensei Eric. How did that go for you?
It was great. We had a really good turnout. We had several people show up. We did combat jiu-jitsu, focusing more self-defense, street-type self-defense, and it was great. It's always a privilege to train with Eric, always. And everybody was very pleased. Everybody walked away happy, learning something, and everybody got together, had a great time. Some seminars you go to are just very rigid, and this was more relaxed, and everybody had a great time, so it was very good.
Now, you obviously, you know, Kumite, you guys have a lot of fighters around you constantly. You guys support a lot of local MMA and fighters professionally and amateur around the country and even overseas. When you get an opportunity to have a legend like this, you know, with the amazing knowledge that he has for karate, kickboxing, and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I mean, your kids had to have just been in awe and just eat that stuff up.
Oh, yeah, they were. They were looking forward to it for weeks in advance, and even the adults as well, because we did adult seminar as well, and they just couldn't wait for him to get here. I try to bring Sensei Eric up as much as I can, you know, at least every couple of years. So it's something that everybody looks forward to, very, very much so.
Now, what he brought to the table in the seminar, have you seen any of it being used yet in the training, you know, for the fighters?
I'm trying to incorporate that with the fighters. You know, with Kumite, I don't get around a lot to see a lot of the other fighters, but I am incorporating it with my guys for sure, you know, for our team, my personal team that I train. So definitely everything we're incorporating and that we've learned is just repetition going over and over and over so it sticks, especially following a seminar. You know, you always want to get in there and do as much as you can so you don't forget anything, but definitely drilling a lot.
But yeah, and you know, obviously, you have a kid that we here at Madhouse have followed very, very tight, and he's a phenomenal kid, Alex. He's a kid you guys sponsor. You know, is there any chance that maybe next time around we can get you know, him up to meet and go to one of these seminars with Eric?
Yeah, that would be phenomenal for sure, without a doubt.
I'm sure that Sensei Shingu would love seeing that head kick that Alex. I'm waiting for that DVD to come out so I can rewatch. Well, so I can watch it a first time because I ain't even got to see it yet. I just heard all these rumors about this super head kick from Corrales, and I was like, "What is?" I was like, "What?"
Yeah, that was sick. He had it posted on Facebook for a while, but yeah, that was phenomenal head kick. It was awesome.
So, since Eric, how do you feel about today's mixed martial arts? Are you a fan of it? Do you watch any of the stuff online or on TV?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've got a couple of kids that are real. I mean, Nick and Nate Diaz started their training with me. Steve, he started training with me, you know, when they were starting out. And so, you know, I follow them and the team. And I you know, I love the popularity of it, and I like the fact that the kids are finally getting paid for it, you know, for their actual matches and their fights, and so I'm thrilled about that. I, you know, and with anything, there's growing pains. You know, I talked to Steve about this, and I just always say, you know, the most important thing is that that we pass on is the respect and loyalty issues that come with really the structure of martial arts. It's all based upon honor and respect, you know, and sometimes when things grow quickly, certain things like that are left out because there's so much media behind it and there's so much hype behind it that, you know, sometimes you see behavior that you really don't want to see. But at the same time, you know, nothing's perfect. I mean, everything, you've got good things and bad things that come with everything. And for the most part, I'm just really thrilled that there's martial artists out there now finally making a good living at that, doing this.
Sensei Eric, I'd like to give you a chance before we run out of time tonight to give everybody any information you'd like to give them on your gym location, how they can find you, if you guys have a Facebook or Twitter account. So please take a few minutes, run at it, thank anybody you would like.
Okay. We actually have media people that handle a lot of that for me. My gym is, the address is 6852 Pacific Avenue in Stockton, California. My phone number is the number I'm talking to you on right now. It's 209-639-9178. Our website is shingufighter.com. I can receive emails right from that website. And, Steve, you know this better than me. Gianna has a Facebook for us. What is that under?
That's Shingu Fighter Facebook.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there's a Shingu
Fighter. Yeah, Shingu Fighter Academy.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's Shingu Fighter Academy.
Okay, you always have to be a topper, don't you? You just always have to top people.
Look, I mean, how often do we get a true legend like this? I mean,
I love it. That's
all
right.
This guy is a true legend. I mean, I want to make sure everybody can find him.
Yeah, that's attention to detail, man. I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate it. It's such an honor to have you come on tonight and even, you know, just spend a few minutes talking. I mean, we, as fans of this sport, we would not have a sport that we have today without you and your family and your lineage. I mean, let's be honest. You know, you told the story. You know, your family came over and introduced, you know, a sport to the South Americans who tweaked it, and today we have MMA. I mean, and without, let's be honest, without that and you teaching the performance of karate you've taught through the 80s and 90s in your career, we wouldn't have a sport like this today. It's guys like you that built what us fans today call MMA.
Well, I really appreciate it. I love martial arts. I mean, it's really made me who I am today. It's done such great things for me, and from health all the way to, you know, my self esteem and all that. So it's just nice to be able to talk to somebody about it every now and then. I start at 6 a.m. with my fitness hybrid martial arts stuff, and then, you know, we finish at 8, 9 at night. So it was really nice. I was looking forward to talking to you guys and meeting you. And none of this would have happened if I didn't have a student like Steve Smith, you know, supporting me. I mean, he's the one that is doing all the hard work to get, our team recognized. And so as far as that goes for me, I would not have any of this notoriety if it wasn't for Steve Smith. So, you know, I'd like to thank him for that.
Steve, I'd like to give you a quick chance because we got about a minute and a half left. So go ahead and you do your role too. Let everybody know where they can get that great gear.
All right. So you can go to kumitemma.com. You can email me there. You can pick up all your equipment there. And I would also like to say thanks to Sensei. We met back in the mid-90s, right when he was beginning jiu-jitsu. I went down. I was fighting in Itakumi to better my game, and, you know, we developed a friendship that's been everlasting. So I just, you know, appreciate him as being my instructor and him taking me on the path that he has. So I credit a lot of my training, you know, to him for sure. So I thank you for that, Sensei.
Both you guys, I appreciate everything. We're going to wrap it up. Steve, I will talk to you again soon. Eric, I hope we can have you on again down the road. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming on tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. Have a good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Carl, pay the bills. Pay the bills, Carl.
Pay the bills.
All right. Pay the bills, Carl. Pay the bills, Carl.
Come on, Bill Miner.
Rat Pound World. 12 days. Get flinched. Razorware. Clothing. Bank Crimes, Global MMA Consulting, No Pain, Just Glory, Central Oregon Track, Combat Sports Insurance, Smoke Shop, 24 LV, Vehicle Sports, Prime Fitness, and Big D Nightclub.
Big Titties.
Hey, a big shout out to everybody who came out and supported the fundraiser Sunday at Big T's, and I hope those girls love those Madhouse shirts. Hey, and Carl, let everybody know that they can find Carl's true story of his family lineage under Bill Miner. Put your hands up, cocksucker. I love that. He was the first train robber to ever say, "Put your hands up, cocksucker."
Cocksucker.
And all he stole were liver pills. Goddamn liver pills.
We're off the air, right? I'm still tripping out about the blow roads in the face thing.
Dude, what the fuck was up with that dude, man? Like, he started out telling a story. I'm like, dude, you're off the fucking track. And next thing you know, he's talking about getting a hand job from Travis Luter. I was like, fucking come on. Dude, my only thing is, obviously the motherfucker was listening to the show, and he figured he'd call in and be a douchebag, but it was still funny radio.
That shit was hilarious.
I can't believe that Travis Luter was that cool to give somebody a hand job. I just don't see it.
Carl didn't find the humor in it either.
Carl didn't find any humor in it. Carl found a phone number, and he's going to track him down and kill him.
Snap his fingers. Snap his neck. Okay, boys, we got a split.
Tomorrow, everybody, Oregon, get out and support this. Join us. Lepaki, me, we'll be there. Budo fights. Let's do it.
Budo.
Let's do it. Budo Fights 9, bitches. Peace. Go.
And I'll have some shirts for those lucky fans who show up.
Maybe. Maybe there will be a giveaway tomorrow.
Later, boys. We'll be right back.
Okay, people, time to disperse. Party's over.